Good evening. A unique day in American history is ending, a day set aside for a nationwide outpouring of mankind seeking its own survival. Earth Day, a day dedicated to enlisting all the citizens of a bountiful country in the common cause of saving life from the deadly byproducts of that bounty, the fouled skies, the filthy waters, the littered earth.
Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970. That's Walter Cronkite, by the way. That unique day began as a great environmental teach-in.
A teach-in was a tactic that the anti-Vietnam War movement used in the mid-1960s.
That's Adam Rome, environmental historian at the University at Buffalo and author of The Genius of Earth Day, how a 1970 teach-in unexpectedly made the first green generation.
It was kind of extracurricular, politically charged discussion between opponents of the war and supporters of the war. And the founder of Earth Day, Gaylord Nelson, heard about that. He'd been trying to find ways of making the environment a national priority. And he thought, if Americans would just stop and really think about pollution and all the other problems, environmental problems of the day, that would move them to act. So he vowed to create a nationwide environmental teach-in in spring 1970, and that became Earth Day.
But Gaylord Nelson, Democratic senator from Wisconsin, didn't go in with a roadmap for that day.
When he made that promise, he had no idea how he was going to do it. The advice he got was to have a very top-down, hierarchical thing where he would pick schools and he'd pick the organizers and he'd suggest the agenda. And I think his genius was to reject that advice. So essentially, he let anyone who wanted to have a teach-in or an Earth Day, as it came to be called, and they could do anything they wanted. Originally, his own staff at the end of 1969 tried to help all the people that wrote saying, I'd love to do this. You got any ideas? But he quickly realized he was going to be overwhelmed. His staff would be overwhelmed. So he hired Dennis Hayes to help run Environmental Teach-In, Inc., a not-for-profit. And then Dennis hired a bunch of other young 20-something 60s activists. In my view, at least, they became the PR firm for Earth Day. And they were the ones that named it Earth Day. They asked, they got an offer from a hip ad guy in New York, and they didn't like the name Teach-In, and he suggested Earth Day, and they took out a full-page ad in the New York Times that said Earth Day in the biggest print I've ever seen in the newspaper. And that was amazing.
Well, I grew up in a paper milling community where there were no pollution controls on it.
This is Dennis Hayes, a national organizer of the first Earth Day in 1970.
So I woke up every morning for the first 18 years of my life with a sore throat from sulfur dioxide and hydrogen sulfide, which also destroyed the roofs of our houses and pitted our automobiles. They poured sludge out into the Columbia River, and I'd walk down there and see thousands of dead fish. They clear-cut the surrounding forests. I have to confess, as I was growing up, that seemed normal. That's how it was. And when I complained a bit about the smell, because when we visited people in other towns, they said, it's a place that stinks, isn't it? My dad patiently explained to me that that's the smell of prosperity. But as I grew older and older, I came to think, geez, it must be possible to make paper without destroying the world. And then to similarly take that same attitude, it must be possible to make electricity. It must be possible to make steel. It must be possible to build a modern industrial society without this kind of ecological damage.
Dennis was a young graduate student when Senator Nelson gave him a job organizing the first Earth Day.
You know, we had planned Earth Day 1970 as one of the major events like the March on the Pentagon, the Poor People's March, the March in Selma. It was to be a one-time event to crystallize an issue and bring it dramatically to the attention of public officials.
When the day came, Dennis got his first true glimpse of its scale and resonance.
Well, I flew off to New York City, where Mayor John Lindsay had given us basically Fifth Avenue. He blocked off the intersections for more than 50 blocks of Fifth Avenue, and we filled it with environmentalists. Climbed up on a platform that was 5 or 6 stories tall, looked out on this sea of people where you simply couldn't see the edge, the people like the ocean extended over the horizon.
For 2 hours, fashionable Fifth Avenue was off limit to automobiles and became a crowded pedestrian mall. The square hadn't looked this clean in years, with volunteer help doing the sprucing up.
What we really face is not air or water pollution, but the pollution of life itself.
And that was probably the most dramatic, one of the most dramatic moments of my life, and certainly of that day when we realized it wasn't just big, but it was truly enormous.
Ultimately, the day grew to well beyond what Senator Nelson and Dennis had dreamed.
In the end, it turned out to be massive. 20 million people participated. Roughly one out of every 10 Americans took part in Earth Day. And it raised all of these issues about the way that our national health, our national environmental well-being, our standard of living were all becoming poorer as the gross domestic product got richer.
In many cases, it wasn't just one day. It was a whole week, and it sometimes had a theme. Birmingham, Alabama had Right to Live Week. They were really concerned about air pollution there. You know, Madison, Wisconsin had Lifestyle on Trial. That was all about our consumer culture. Tens of thousands of people organized those local events.
Well, environmental issues have been treated sort of like a pendulum in politics. We have 10 good years, 10 bad years, 10 good years, 10 bad years. And interestingly, Earth Day, of course, has evolved with it. When you have a period of great environmental advancements, we have these celebratory events. And when you have a period when they're rolling back our progress, we have these protest demonstrations and marches and things. It evolves to meet the needs of the time. Earth Day 2020, at a personal level, will be the quietest Earth Day that I have had in 50 years. We do lose something as we move into an entirely virtual event. You can have 5 million people watching speeches and videos and animations on their computers, and it just doesn't have the same kind of impact of having 750,000 people at a rally in the National Mall facing the Capitol and screaming at the White House. It's just different kinds of events. But I will say that the generation that is going to be mostly fighting these battles, the younger Americans and younger people around the world, are digital natives. They already spend a lot of time on their computers. They are comfortable in that environment and will be receptive to messages from scientists, from celebrities, from the Pope, from other religious leaders, and it will not be a total loss. If COVID-19 had hit in 1970, when a small computer would be a Cyber 76 that still requires its own cooling system and its own independent room, and it only has about 12 other computers in the country to talk to, COVID-19 would have killed Earth Day in 1970. It's a really important speed bump in 2020.
For me, you know, it's easy sometimes to despair about the future, but whenever I get in that mood, thinking about Earth Day is an antidote. We came together, millions of people, not just on one day, but for years and decades afterward. And that really made a difference, and we could do it again.
Adam Rome is environmental historian at the University at Buffalo and author of The Genius of Earth Day, How a 1970 Teach-In Unexpectedly Made the First Green Generation. And Dennis Hayes is a founding organizer of Earth Day in 1970 and president and CEO of the Bullitt Foundation. And you can see streaming Earth Day events at earthday.org.